The remote hearing of the Capital Investment Committee for February 3rd is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by House Public Information. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Chair Lee?
Lee present.
Vice Chair Murphy?
Murphy present.
Representative Erdahl?
Erdahl present.
Representative Agbaje?
Agbaje present.
Representative Berg?
Berg present.
Representative Davids?
Davids present.
Representative Frankie?
Frankie present.
Representative Freiberg?
Present.
Representative Hansen?
Here.
Representative Hewitt?
Present.
Representative Lilly?
Lilly present.
Representative Lucero?
Present, ready to serve.
Representative Moran?
Present.
Representative Pearson?
Pearson present.
Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh present and excited.
Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen present.
Representative Ryer?
Ryer present.
Representative West?
West present.
And Representative Zhang?
Present.
Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. A quorum is present. Chair Murphy, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, February 1st?
I move approval of the minutes for Tuesday, February 1st, Mr. Chair.
Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for Tuesday, February 1st. Any discussion, members? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for Tuesday, February 1st is approved. Members, today we will continue hearing from the governor's 2022 bonding recommendations. We will take questions after the presentation, and as customary, please use the raise hand function for me to put your name down on the list. First up, we have Commissioner Strowman from the Department of Natural Resources. Commissioner, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Sarah Strowman, and I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And I would like to thank you, Mr. Chair, as well as the members of the committee for the opportunity this morning to present the governor's local jobs and projects portion of the Walz Flanagan budget to move Minnesota forward. Given the state's favorable financial situation and the value we're seeing Minnesotans place on our natural resources and outdoor spaces, we strongly believe now is a critical time to invest. It's a great time to make sure that we can continue to offer high quality outdoor opportunities and also make sure our state-owned facilities are safe places for our employees to work. Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask if Mr. Meyer, Assistant Commissioner Meyer, can maybe put up our slides. Perfect. Okay, perfect. Thank you. So I'd like to begin this morning by providing a brief overview of DNR's capital assets. I know some of you have heard this before, but I think it's always a good reminder to review the types of assets we manage before we talk about the specifics of the proposal. And the reason for that is that DNR assets really are unlike many other state assets. Our assets serve Minnesotans across the state, and caring for these assets requires a systematic and comprehensive approach. These assets are diverse and they support all parts of DNR's mission. So some examples of DNR's managed assets you'll see on the slide here, but they include the state park campground or cabin where Minnesotans and visitors spend their summer vacations, the public fishing pier where a child catches their first fish, and the fish hatchery that raised that fish for stocking. State forests and the roads that provide access to them that support wildlife habitat, recreation, and the forest products economy. The DNR office, where people can buy a fishing license, submit a permit application, or get information about natural resources in their community. And the native prairie that supports pheasants, songbirds, and pollinators while improving water quality and capturing carbon. Bob, if you could hit the next slide. In addition to the diverse types of assets, DNR's assets are numerous and geographically dispersed. We have assets we manage in all of Minnesota's 87 counties, and they include 5.6 million acres of land, nearly 3,000 buildings, and 30,000 building components. Combined, these built assets are valued at about $3 billion in current replacement value. Our deferred maintenance need is too large to address at once, which is why we've developed that systematic comprehensive 10-year approach. And I believe a link to our most recent 10-year report has been shared with the committee, and encourage you to take a look at that report and have any follow-up discussion on it if you wish. Bob, if you could hit the next slide. Finally, the last characteristic of our assets that I want to just touch on are that our assets are aging, and they are a bit older on average than other state assets. One in four of the buildings we manage is in unacceptable or poor condition. Nearly one in three is over 80 years old, and only one in four buildings meet today's design and building standards. Many of the DNR managed facilities are buildings that our infrastructure were built in the early to mid 20th century and are past due for maintenance, renewal, and modernization. For example, Minnesota has the second oldest state park system in the country. The most significant growth years in our state park system occurred in 1937, 1957, and 1963. So significant time has elapsed. Most of our Minnesota fish hatcheries were constructed in the 1950s and are still operating with that original equipment. Bob, if you could hit the next slide, please. DNR managed lands, buildings, facilities, and infrastructure are part of the fabric of Minnesota communities and contribute to our quality of life. The recent increase in outdoor activity further emphasizes the importance of natural lands and related infrastructure to community prosperity. Our key areas of investment in the Walz-Flanagan budget to move Minnesota forward are to rehabilitate aging and failing infrastructure, to invest in public lands and facilities and enhance access, and to provide pass-through grants to communities to meet local needs. As we developed our initial request, we used data from the 10-year capital asset need report, and we also focused on a number of principles. Those principles include advancing DNR's mission and our strategic priorities, including connecting people to the outdoors, advancing diversity, equity, and inclusion, and managing natural resources responsibly for economic and community benefit. We also prioritized addressing the most urgent rehabilitation needs, focusing on life and safety issues and the most urgent repairs, minimizing construction tails and operating costs, and seeking to leverage office consolidation and pilot more flexible approaches to office space and use. Bob, if you'll hit the next slide, I'll talk next about the specifics of the governor's proposal for DNR. And this slide provides a high-level overview of the bonding package that the governor and lieutenant governor have proposed for DNR. The recommended bonding investments, which total $221.4 million, will advance DNR's mission and address critical issues such as improving access to the outdoors, advancing safety and community well-being, and rehabilitating aging and, in some cases, failing infrastructure. Bob, if you could hit the next slide, this shows the same $221.4 million investment, but in a list format, so you can see the categories where the governor has recommended investment. Bob, if you hit the next slide, please. And if you think about back to that pie chart and you saw that big piece that was about half of the total recommended bonding proposal, it's $110 million is to rehabilitate. Oh, I'm sorry, Bob, could you go back one slide? Rehabilitate existing assets. These dollars ensure we can repair or replace degraded or failing building components, address public water access sites, bridges, roads, trails throughout the state, as well as wastewater and drinking water systems at state parks. Bob, you can hit the next slide now. The governor's recommendation also provides significant investment in modernizing existing facilities and investing in new facilities across Minnesota, including adding needed capacity for storage of mineral exploration samples at the Hibbing Drill Corps Library, addressing critical renewal and replacement needs at the Waterville Fish Hatchery, which I know the committee had an opportunity to see. That facility is nearly 70 years old, and we need to replace the main hatchery building, adding biosecurity measures and constructing a discharge water treatment system. This category also funds enhancing the safety and efficiency of tree seed and seedling storage and processing facilities at Badura State Forest Nursery. And again, I know the committee, I had an opportunity to visit with you at that site, and you certainly saw an example of the age of our infrastructure at that site as well. We also have investments to replace campground shower buildings at state parks to enhance their safety, functionality, and accessibility while reducing maintenance costs and addressing the highest priority replacements of inadequate or unsafe office and storage spaces statewide and the most critical renovations to historic buildings. This category also includes accessibility investments that will allow us to complete our accessibility work at William O'Brien State Park and start accessibility improvements at Fort Snelling State Park, as well as one of our wildlife management areas. Proposed investment also supports acquisition of key inholdings at state parks and state forests, reforestation after timber harvest, forest pest outbreaks and storms and wildfires, a major safety project at Pine Bend Bluffs Scientific Natural Area, adding more shore fishing opportunities across the state to enable and encourage anglers of all incomes, ages, and abilities to enjoy fishing. This supports our Wildlife Management Area Gateway Development Project, which we hope to launch to create a more inclusive experience at select wildlife management areas. And then finally, some renewal and enhancement of campgrounds and day use areas to meet the needs of current and future users. Bob, if you would hit the next slide. That third category of investment that we wanted to highlight this morning are community grants. And these grants support our local communities, fostering state and local partnerships that benefit Minnesotans, including our flood hazard mitigation program. And I will note on this program that every dollar we spend on flood mitigation avoids $7 in future damages. And we know that climate change and the resulting increased intensity of storm events has elevated the need for continued robust funding in this area. The local and regional local and regional parks and trails grant programs. These programs allow DNR to partner with local communities to develop parks and trails that help create a network of close to home recreation opportunities, which is a very important complement to the facilities we provide as a state agency. And then last but certainly not least, our community tree planting grants. We know that our community forests are facing imminent threats from invasive species such as emerald ash borer, oak wilt, and it's important to make sure that communities have the financial resources to maintain these important tree canopy covers. Bob, if you'd hit the next slide, I'm just going to sum up. With a historic budget surplus, the Walz Flanagan budget to move Minnesota forward represents a unique opportunity for one-time investment in natural resources and outdoor recreation, and we really believe this is a once-in-a-generation opportunity. This bonding package, coupled with the climate and drought relief elements from the governor's supplemental budget package, really capitalizes on this unique opportunity to serve Minnesotans and maintain the quality of life to which makes our state the great place to live that it is. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I will end our presentation, and I'm happy to take any questions along with Assistant Commissioner Meyer, who is here with me.
Thank you, Commissioner. Haven't seen any hands yet. Just wanted to ask, can you help us distinguish between the difference between asset preservation and betterment of buildings, just as a reminder, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, happy to do that. So the asset preservation is really about taking care of those assets we have. It's about fixing or replacing The betterment of buildings is really about modernizing facilities, renewing, replacing. So it's sort of taking care of things in their current form, or if we are to the point where we actually need to replace a building, then that moves into that betterment category.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and good morning, Commissioner. Thank you for coming out today. Also, I want to thank you for reminding people to get outdoors every day. I just love that. I think that's a great reminder for all of us, and I'll be curious to see, maybe you already had your photo of what you've done today, this morning outside, but anyways, that's not why we're here, but it's neat. Thank you for doing that. So I just have a comment, a question kind of as you're buying, as you're investing in Minnesota in infrastructure and redoing it. I hope that you're considering some of the changes in interest in fishing, and some of the newer Minnesotans want to maybe fish differently. And, you know, we've kind of had a strong investment. I just kind of use trout as an example. And not that I'm against investments in trout. I know it's hugely popular, and people come in from all over the country and world to fish for our trout, and also Minnesotans, but also restocking different fish. So I hope you're considering really investing in infrastructure also, and kind of some of the new fish. So that's kind of a comment. But my question is, I was looking at your pie chart, and it's kind of a bit of a concern for me, as people have, I saw a lot of your pictures, especially like your summary picture had, like you're meeting the needs of mobility challenged people, whether it be hunting and some of the trail use. But on your pie chart, you only had like 5%, I think, going towards meeting that. And I hope you'd consider changing some of the formulas a little bit to meet some of that, especially given the age of your infrastructure and buildings, that you would hope that you would, because there's a lot, you know, that you would change kind of that pie chart a little bit to invest more in meeting the needs that people might have challenges, you know, with mobility issues. And certainly we want those folks to be able to have access to our you know, our parks and trails. And I know you know this, but I hope you consider changing your pie a little bit. That's all.
Commissioner Stroman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lilly, thank you very much for bringing up both of those issues. And I think with your first comment, you raise a really important issue in that it's not only the age of our infrastructure that is a challenge, it's that when our infrastructure was built, right, in the 50s and 60s, that's a different, we've seen changes in habits and use. And so really that is part of the reason we're thinking about modernization and renewal. And so when we think about, for example, investments in shore fishing opportunities, right, for people who aren't fishing with a boat, as we're thinking about rehabilitating public water accesses, thinking about not only today's motorized recreation, but as we know, paddle sports are extremely important. And, you know, are we creating the infrastructure for that? So, and with the hatcheries, absolutely, right? We have 1950s infrastructure. And so as we rehabilitate that, also making sure that our fisheries are, those hatcheries are ready to support fisheries of the future, not only as a result of changing habits, but also a result of changing habits, right? We want to make sure that those hatcheries can support climate resilient fisheries. To your second point about accessibility and mobility, thank you for the opportunity to clarify, because that accessibility investment piece that you're seeing as a small part of the pie chart is really a special project that we started undertaking a couple of years ago, to focus not only on the accessibility of our buildings and our parking lots and the infrastructure, which we do address as part of our asset preservation and our betterment of buildings, right? We're always looking to upgrade and make sure that our buildings are accessible and our infrastructure. But what that specific accessibility project is to think about the entire outdoor experience, the entire state park or wildlife management experience, recognizing that people with mobility or other challenges aren't only interested in the visitor center, aren't only interested in the parking lot or the picnic shelter. Really what we want them to experience is that unique experience that you can only experience in that state park. And so thinking about how we share that entire experience. And so that's what that particular funding is dedicated for. And so you will see other accessibility related investments reflected in the other categories in addition to that.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner Shulman, so very much for hopping on today to join us. And thank you to the DNR staff for hosting us at the two visits, to really appreciate that. Next up, we have Assistant Commissioner Kadelka from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Commissioner, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. This is Alexis Donitz, for the record, and I serve as legislative coordinator for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. As you mentioned, I am here today with Assistant Commissioner Kurt Kadelka, and we have the opportunity to testify today. Commissioner Kessler sends her regrets. She is participating in a tribal consultation that had been previously scheduled, and so unfortunately she is not able to join us today. Next slide. MPCA's mission is to protect and improve the environment and human health, and we do this across a range of environmental media, including air, land, and water. And we are proud that the Wallace Flanagan Budget to Move Minnesota Forward includes capital projects to improve the environment and human health across all of these media areas. Next slide. The governor's capital budget this year includes 11 items for MPCA. 7 of those items are within our capital assistance program for recycling and solid waste infrastructure. And then there are 4 additional items that we'll walk through today. The total investment represented in this year's requests are $82,334,000. Next slide. So 2 of our projects are designed to address community readiness for a changing climate. The first project is a climate adaptation and resiliency project, while the second project supports climate change mitigation by building infrastructure to support increasing interest in electric vehicles. Next slide. Our first project is a request for $21.1 million for local government stormwater construction grants. The goal of this new program is to help communities fund the stormwater infrastructure improvements. So, for example, expanding stormwater collection systems to be able to handle a higher volume of water flow. Since 1951, precipitation in the Twin Cities has increased by more than 20%, or 5.5 inches per year. It's expected that in the future, rainfall will occur less frequently in Minnesota, but with greater intensity of storms. Minnesota's stormwater infrastructure is aging, and it is undersized and inadequate to handle this volume of water. MPCA surveyed stormwater professionals statewide in late 2019, and 98% of those respondents, half of whom were outside the metro, indicated a need to implement at least one project of a type that would be eligible under this program. This project focuses specifically on stormwater because stormwater projects often don't rank highly for public facilities authority funding. The PFA funding system focuses more on projects that have a water quality benefit, and so projects addressing water quantity are often not able to be funded. It's important to remember that the adequacy of stormwater infrastructure can have an immediate and dramatic impact on people's lives. Flooding from one extreme rain event can result in devastating and costly damage to people's homes and businesses. Next slide. Our next project seeks to enhance the state's electric vehicle charging infrastructure in areas that lack EV charging locations. This project is a high priority for this year because of the opportunities presented by federal infrastructure legislation. This $13.8 million can serve as a match for $65 million in federal funding from the bipartisan infrastructure package. As you know, Minnesota has been able to use a portion of the funding from the Volkswagen settlement to build out charging infrastructure corridors, but the VW settlement capped spending on charging infrastructure at 15% of the total settlement funds. EVs continue to represent a growing percentage of the vehicles on their road, and this funding will help to ensure that all areas of the state continue to have the necessary charging infrastructure to meet the needs of the traveling public. Next slide.
Mr. Chair and committee members, good morning. My name is Kirk Adelka. I'm an assistant commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I'll be going over the next couple of projects, as my colleague had mentioned. The first is a category of addressing historical pollution. This is something we've come forward with the legislature in the past, to help with us addressing various contaminated sites across Minnesota. This year, we have one project in this area, and it centers in the city of Andover. This summer, we were doing some contamination monitoring for what we call emerging contaminants, including 1,4-dioxane and also PFAS. Next to this closed landfill, we did find it in a number of homes. Over the summer through this winter, we've done various phases of sampling of private well owners and have found now 50 homes that are impacted over the health-based value set by the Department of Health, some of them multiple magnitudes of order above the amounts recommended by the Department of Health. The agency worked with the Department of Health to provide these folks with bottled water immediately. However, they do need a long-term drinking water source. This neighborhood is not connected to municipal water. Municipal water is available in the area. So this proposal would address this by connecting a portion of the neighborhood, the Red Oaks neighborhood, up to municipal water. And this would provide these homes with long-term drinking water. This dollars would be for the actual main water lines, home connections, and sealing the private wells. As we are putting together this proposal, we are continuing to get more information. This includes refinement of the cost estimate. We had a working number of $12 million. The good news is we expect this project to be significantly less in the $6 to $7 million range. However, we are still working with the city to come up with a more refined estimate as we continue to collect information at the site. The one thing to note is some of these items I mentioned are bondable and some are not. They will need a cash portion, for instance, home connections and sealing of wells. The next category is the Capital Assistance Program. This is a way for the state to help local units of government with their solid waste activities. The effort here is to increase recycling and composting to reduce the need of landfills. As you may have heard, in the metro area, for instance, we are in the situation where we're having to increase landfill space because of the amount of waste we are throwing away. One of the best ways to address that is by reducing the amount of waste going to landfills through organics and recycling programs. The Capital Assistance Program has a proposed change this year. Currently, one of the caps on the grants per project is $2 million per project per county. The governor and MPCA are proposing that limit go up to $5 million. The $2 million number was created in 1985, and since then, inflation would make that number $5 million. And so to accurately reflect and provide the same level of assistance as we previously have, we are proposing this change. As a result, the numbers here you see reflect those, that change also. As mentioned, we have a number of projects here. I'm going to go through them very quickly. But the first is organics capacity. We know right now about 20% of what we throw away is food waste. If we want to make a dent in reducing what's going to our disposal facilities, whether it's waste energy or landfills, this is the best way to do it. This grant program would help in that area by providing to entities, nonprofits, or local units of government efforts to reduce food waste. The next two projects are ones that the legislature funded in the last bonding bill for their first phase. So we're bringing them back to complete the projects. The first is Polk Douglas. Polk Douglas works with a number of surrounding counties to support a waste to energy facility. They have what is called a materials recovery facility, which is coming to the end of its life and is very small compared to its current needs. This would buy the equipment to allow for it to expand and be up to date to pull recyclables before material goes to the waste energy facility. This would allow for them to operate more efficiently. The next project is Scott and Dakota County's partnership. This is for a household hazardous waste facility. Again, the phase one of this was funded through the legislature at the last bonding bill in 2020. This would complete the project. These counties are working in partnership to be able to collect household hazardous waste. This is an important task that is only done by the public entities. Private entities do not do this. This allows to make sure we, as we send things to landfills, they do not have contaminants or pollutants of concern or create other types of problems. This facility would be built along the county's borders and meet a need where there right now is not capacity in the area. The next facility is Olmsted County. Olmsted County also operates a waste-to-energy facility. To become a more efficient system, they too would like to pull out non-combustible waste before it goes to their waste-to-energy facility and allowing that to be recycled. And examples are glass and metals. What they like to do then is build a material recovery facility to keep that material out of landfills. And this is Olmsted County, and the materials that go there also serve Dodge County. And next is Polk County. Polk County partners with its neighboring counties to also pre-process its waste before it goes to a waste energy facility. This system has received bonding in the past. These dollars would allow for additional upgrades to the system that were not available at the time of the last project and would help with their labor shortages. This would pull additional recyclables out of the materials before they go to the waste energy facility. The next project is Chisago County. This is another example of a household hazardous waste facility in a county that is no longer can meet the capacity and the demands of it from Chisago County and its neighboring counties of Washington and Isanti County. Again, this would help keep things such as paint, chemical, household chemicals, pesticides, and that out of the waste stream. The last project is in Cass County. Cass County also has a very old household hazardous waste facility and a transfer facility. This project actually 30 years ago was first funded by the Capital Assistance Program. The facility now needs to be replaced, and so they've come before us again to make those upgrades and build a new facility, not only for the household hazardous waste facility materials, but their recycling operations. We did receive, after releasing the governor's budget, that they have come back with, received some new cost estimates. So these dollar amounts, as we get more information, will be shared by the county and us with the committee.
And we're getting to the end of our list here, but this next category is looking at opportunities to better monitor existing pollution sources. Next slide. This request is for an investment of $1 million to install a network of 40 nitrate sensors for continuous real-time monitoring of nitrates at key locations in the state's major river basins. Currently, measuring nitrate levels in Minnesota rivers requires physically collecting a grab sample and transporting it to a lab for analysis. This is time-consuming, and it limits the amount of nitrate monitoring that can be conducted each year. Installing real-time nitrate sensors would allow for more nimble and timely collection of data and would help to identify potential impacts to drinking water and future efforts to reduce nitrate pollution. Next slide. And so that represents the full list of the budget requests for MPCA in the governor's budget this year. Next slide, we are happy to take any questions from the committee.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chairman Lee. And I think I'll go to Assistant Commissioner Gadelka. The Andover project, is this related to the pit that we sealed up a couple of years ago or provided money to do?
Commissioner Kodelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is neighboring the WDE landfill. As mentioned, there was work there to remove a hazardous waste pit at the location. Our work started when we were looking for these emerging contaminants alongside of the landfill. We found small amounts, but as we worked away from the landfill, we should have saw the contamination lessen and not have as large an issue that we have seen. Unfortunately, the opposite happened. The further we went from the landfill, the higher contamination we found. We believe there's another source to the south. And so while the WD landfill was what started us to look in this area, it may potentially be a source or it may not. We do need to move forward with this project at this time.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. So you haven't quite identified the source yet. Is that correct?
Commissioner Kodelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct. Our regular process for this is first find out what are the potential risks to human health and the environment, in this case, drinking water, and define those, make sure they have drinking water, and behind the scenes there, find out the larger questions of where is the source and what things could be done to reduce that. And those activities are also going on at this time, but we're coming, the for bonding, we are just coming forward right now for addressing the drinking water risk.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chairman Lee. And Commissioner Kudelka, you mentioned a need for cash in this. Do you have an amount of cash you're looking for?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, at this point, we're still refining that. We do believe the total amount should be in the $6 to $7 million range, and potentially half could be bondable, half would need to be cash. We're still working on that. We apologize that we don't have the exact numbers, but as this has developed since the summer, we've been working very fast to make sure we can move this project forward with this bonding window.
Representative Erdahl, last follow-up.
Yeah, one final. Thank you, Chairman Lee. And that is, over the years, we've done, we've heard a lot about the Burnsville site. What is the status of what's going on there now?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, the freeway landfill is in our closed landfill program. We are continuing to finish our designs for that and also working on the access issue to make sure we can move forward with the project. And we want to thank the legislature for the additional policy language that was created for the closed landfill program to address this site from last year. We're working our way through that, but we weren't able to be ready this year to have bids with actual dollar amounts for the legislature to consider.
Representative West.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also have a question for Commissioner Kudelka. For the Olmsted project that has the expansion of capacity, in 2019, we enacted a state law that required the PCA to do economic analysis on public and private waste organizations when they do this kind of expenditure. And has that analysis been done? And what were the conclusions from it?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the question. The CAP project is a multiple step process. The first in the process that we're in right now is the identifying funding needs and collecting that and securing that funding to move into the grant application process. The changes you mentioned, along with a number of other requirements, would then, once their funding is secured, we would have grant applications come in. That would include making sure that they have the finances for their match, that the project is economically viable, and other things such as the public and private entity review of facilities to see there's an analysis of there's impacts there. Those pieces would come in the next step, which is the application process, the final application process.
Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. And I also have a question about the organics expansion, the first one you mentioned. You said it was grants to nonprofits to enhance adoption of composting, those kind of things. Is there any more specifics you can add of what those grants, some examples of what those grants would be spent on specifically?
Commissioner Kudelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the question. This is a little different. The CAP program used to work as a RFP, request for proposal. The legislature would provide a dollar amount, and then the agency would go out for requesting for projects. That's what we're looking to do with the CAP project. We know there are a number of organics projects out there. There are a number of examples that local governments could partner with nonprofits to move forward. That could include capacity for transfer stations for organics, so those trucks that are picking up organics curbside don't have to go all the way to the compost facility development, and aerobic digestion facility development. And under the governor and MPCA's proposal to modernize the CAP program, we'd allow for also waste prevention activities. So that could mean food rescue opportunities, for instance, freezer space or that to collect food, maybe from a grocery store or that, and then make it available to others.
Chair Hansen.
Can I just wrap up just one?
Go ahead, Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, thanks for that clarification on that. I was wondering, because it's kind of generic, but with the allocation for the economic impact on local haulers, my concern is if we allocate this money before we realize the economic impact, well, we're not going to be able to properly spend that money. So I have some concerns about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative West. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Kadelka. A few weeks ago in the Environment Finance Committee, we had discussions on waste, and one of those was on the Pig's Eye dump. And just wondering, let me back up a bit. So we'll be getting the end of the February forecast, February forecast, which may have additional dollars. Does the agency anticipate any supplemental budget to the supplemental budget recommendations at that time?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I do not know overall. I can talk about our next steps for Pig's Eye, if that is helpful.
That would be helpful.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Pig's Eye, we do have some more investigation work to do and design work, and we do have funds available for that right now under our MLCAT. It could be in a future situation where we come forward with the legislature if dollars available on MLCAT are not enough to carry out those activities. But at this point, this year, we would not have anything else. We have the funding we need to do the next year's work.
Chair Hansen.
And Commissioner Kadelka, you've referenced MLCAT. Well, that fund, with the number of sites that it is supposed to cover, there's no way it can cover that. And the state has not refunded the money that it took in 2003 and 2005 from that fund. And I see no recommendation in the budget to repay that fund that is supposed to clean up these legacy sites. Is that correct?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Mr. Chair and committee members, correct. MPCA's budget request do not contain that.
Chair Hansen, last follow-up.
No further questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Kadelka and Ms. Dona, for coming by to present the MPCA's recommendation. Next up, we have Commissioner Anderson Kelleher from the Department of Transportation. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I am joined by a number of MnDOT folks, but Sam Brown is going to be presenting the slides, and I will be talking you through them. So we're glad to be invited today to talk about this 2022 Governor's Capital Budget Recommendation. I'm going to move quickly through the first few slides and spend more time on the back. MnDOT, just overall at a glance, is the fourth largest roadway system in the nation, with over 145,000 centerline miles, including trunk highways and local roads. And we'll talk a little bit about both of those. Also, nearly 5,000 bridges that are greater than 10 feet in length. We'll keep going. We also have 50% of state highways under MnDOT's jurisdiction and 50% of state highways and 35% of our state bridges are 50 years old or older. And we have 398 projects planned in the 2021 biennium, $21 billion planned in investments for state highways over the next 20 years, our MnSHIP plan. Keep moving. We work with our partners to also support 7 active ports. Many of you have visited these ports, 3 Lake Superior ports, 4 Mississippi River port systems, as well as transit services in all 80 non-metro counties, 133 publicly owned state-funded airports, as well as a little over 4,000 track miles serving 21 railroad companies. We'll keep moving. So we use a capital strategic planning set of objectives as we are working on this plan: open decision-making, transportation safety, critical connections between communities and people, system stewardship overall, and healthy communities. Keep on moving. So this is the overall plan. And what I'm going to share with you today is we're going to break this apart. So we're not going to spend too much time on this slide. But as you can see, the overall proposal is almost $402 million. It's a mix of GO bonds, trunk highway bonds, and some general fund cash And that all brings us to that complete total. Like I said, I'm gonna take us through each of these areas, so not spend too much time here, but did want the committee to have the full picture on one slide of these investments. I would also like to mention that we are aware that the governor is also going to, governor and lieutenant governor, are going to make a number of recommendations in their supplemental budget that will also support the maximization of the recent federal highway bill. All right, we're gonna keep going. So this is probably our biggest story at MnDOT, and that is after many, many years of hard work and working with our federal partners, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act finally passed last fall, the IIJA. And this provides $4.8 billion over 5 years in federal highway formula funding for roads and bridges. This represents a 30% increase in the state's formula funding and a 20% increase for existing core programs and four new special programs. Those new special programs are Carbon, Protect, a bridge program, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few moments, and the electric vehicle charging network. There also are going to be new and expanded competitive grant programs for state, local, and tribal governments. We're going to keep going. So one of the most important things that, if you remember only one thing about my presentation today, I want you to remember this, that there needs to be a state and local match to many of these programs to make them successful. For us to be able to spend the dollars in Minnesota, we do need a federal match on most of the programs that I just highlighted. And what we've done in this table, which totals $185 million for the state and local match of to the $760 million per year of federal funds, is give you an idea of each of those areas for coming from the Federal Highway Administration, how much will come yearly to MnDOT from the federal government, and then what it takes to match that for both state and local communities. There is a specifically for local communities, there is money coming. That's $71 million a year. That needs a match as well. Most of these matches tend to be at 20% in the highway program. They do vary a bit in the other programs. You can see here in the airports program, it's a 10% match. And for the Federal Transit Administration, the match is about 36%. This is the non-metro area transit program. We estimated the discretionary programs as well, which we think are critical. They have been very important to projects around the state in all areas. And many of your communities have applied with us for these type of discretionary grants in the past. We did a calculation based on the amount of federal money available and what historically Minnesota has received. So this is saying that we may not receive every single dollar out of every program that we would be entitled to, but we historically do about 2%. And the reason we share this with you today and why it is so important is that the strongest applications for these discretionary programs already have state and local funds in place to be able to make them, you know, really successfully competitive in the federal discretionary programs. We're going to keep going here. So one of the first programs that I want to highlight is the High Priority Bridge Network Program. This is going to bring $80 million of trunk highway bonds to the state of Minnesota. And this proposal can leverage actually equal amounts of federal funding. Bridge conditions, as many of you are aware, are currently meeting targets, but they are projected to decline significantly over the next few years. And I also want to share that this does not have an impact to our operating budget because project costs include project development and engineering services. It also is a good idea, I think, to give you an idea of if you would like just a few of the types of bridges we're talking about in the state. U.S. Highway 14, Riverfront Drive in Mankato is a possibility. The Trunk Highway 55, North Fork of the Crow River in Painesville. We have the Robert Street Bridge in St. Paul. There are upcoming for replacement with 394 are the Dunwoody Bridges, and then 212 over Buffalo Creek in Helen. And I actually have a whole list that I don't want to spend too much time on, but if people have questions, we certainly could dive in more to this. Previous appropriations for trunk highway bridges, $400 million of trunk highway bonds in 2018 through the Corridors of Commerce program, and $242 million in trunk highway bonds in 2017, which was a combination of funds. We're going to go to the next slide. The average cost to replace a bridge in Minnesota in 2020 was $708,000 and a little bit of change. There are a little over 15,000 bridges on the local system alone. And it's important to know that about 9,500 of those bridges are in a deficient state. 786 are in a poor state or thereabouts. And 772 of those bridges are identified as high priority replacements over 5 years. Important information for you all. I'm going to keep going here. So there, we also administer a local road improvement program, LRIP. Here we are asking for $90 million in general obligation bonds. They have to be GO bonds since they are not directly on the trunk highway system. And this, again, will leverage other dollars to be able to maximize what we can spend. I'm going to keep going. I know you're a little bit behind, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to try to catch you up, and then maybe members will have specific questions. An important program to MnDOT is also the rail grade crossing warning device program. We're asking for $5 million in GO bonds. Once again, it has to be GO because of the nature of where we're spending that money. Really an important public safety issue for all users of the roadway system and also the train system across the state. I'm going to keep going. Port Development Assistance Program, near and dear to many people's hearts on the committee, $5 million in GO bonds to support the infrastructure needs of public ports. And this really both expedites the movement of commodities and passengers on that commercial navigation system. I'm going to keep going. Safe Routes to School, a very popular program in Minnesota that has received some funding in the past. And what I want to share with you about Safe Routes to School is that it does have to be GO bonds because often this is a combination of things that are done to help all users of the system, especially our youngest users, be able to walk and roll more effectively and safely to school. And so in 2018, there's a huge need for this program. In 2018, we received 29 applications that totaled over $6 million in need. So here we're asking for 1.5 to be able to continue the program forward. All right, let's go to the next slide. And active transportation. So this program actually was on the books for a number of years, but did receive its first funding in, let's see, 2021 of $5 million that allowed MnDOT to really work with communities to be able to produce the type of results they want to see. And so $4 million of this is GO bonds, which could be used in partnership with communities. $1 million is general fund cash to work in Indian country. And this is very important as well. Native American people in Minnesota have a higher rate of death when they are walking than any other group. And so there's a real need to make sure that we are working with tribal communities to address these pedestrian needs. You can see the picture here. It really, I think, illustrates what can happen in a community. You see the picture above, that's the existing roadway, and then the design below with pedestrian bump outs, as well as good marking and striping, allows for both the slowing of the vehicle traffic, but also better ease of use. All right, we're gonna keep going. Truck parking improvements, $5 million. This has been an expanded issue as we have seen as the supply chain and the regulations and rules on truckers have been changing. One of the things that we do is in partnership with the federal government is work on these issues of expanded truck parking that is safe for the truckers, safe for the rest of the motoring community. And also really in part of this is about enhancing the safety at these locations. We'll go to the next slide. A very popular program with the legislature, the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program. We're asking for $2 million in GO bonds. These are the grants to regional railroads, short lines, and shippers. Next slide. The Greater Minnesota Transit Program, as I mentioned, we do have line responsibility over all transit that is non-metro, and we work with our partners. So this $1 million of GO bonds will help in Greater Minnesota. We, in the past, have had upwards of $40 million in needs identified. There has been, I think, some assistance with some ability to make some progress on that because of federal monies coming in. Now, finally, I think we're almost there. The Capital Facilities Improvement Program. And here we're asking for $71.2 million in trunk highway bonds and a combination of cash. This MnDOT actually owns 892 facilities. Important for the Capital Investment Committee to know that at 279 different sites. This particular request is largely going towards a singular request, and that request is construction funding for the new Virginia headquarters building and maintenance campus. And that's $66.3 million of this request. And we can certainly follow up. I know there probably will be questions about more detail on that. And then there is the Hutchinson Area Transportation Service addition at $2.2 million. That is a partnership, and we often do partnerships with communities, with the city of Hutchinson, McLeod County, and that's why you will see it, the combination of bonds and cash. The total project cost there is $7.1 million, and we would be participating with $2.2 million. There's also the Hermantown Truck Campus, the Pike Lake replacement at $2.7 million. One thing I just want to share that I think is so important is throughout the pandemic and COVID-19, MnDOT folks have been reporting to their work location at a very high level in terms of state government. Over 75% of our employees have been working on site in the office, lab, or field. And approximately 25% of MnDOT employees have been working from their homes. And so you can see why our facilities, because of the nature of our work, are so important to us. Then finally, one more item, and then I will stop. The Rail Corridor Capacity Improvement Program, a request of $16.1 million in GO bonds. This is to be used along the BNSF Railway Hinkley subdivision between Minneapolis and Duluth. It has significant improvements for corridor capacity for both freight and passenger rail, and the request will serve as a competitive match for future federal funds application. We believe that we can leverage this money into a significant amount of money for that Minneapolis to Duluth corridor. Mr. Chair, I'm going to stop. I hope that was fast enough to kind of catch up a little bit. I know there's a couple questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. First up is Chair Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Commissioner. I have a question about the request today that you're saying $5 million for ports. And last year when you came before us, you were asking for almost $28 million. What's changed, or is this in addition? Will you clarify the request with what you requested,
Commissioner,
in the main thing in 2021?
Sure. I'm going to actually phone a friend here on ports, and I'm going to see who comes on the line to assist, if it's Mr. Radin or if it is someone from the budget office who can help us with the ports number.
Then I have a follow-up.
Okay, we'll let him come online. Why don't you, should we begin the follow-up, Mr. Chair? And then he is.
Please identify yourself and proceed with the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Eric Radin with MnDOT Government Affairs. And I think, you know, we work very closely with our partners through the Port Development Assistance Program, and recognize that there are significant number of needs in the program. I think, the Port Association is kind of working through their representation to bring forward a request that would potentially supplement our request. There are public ports in St. Paul, Winona, Red Wing, and Duluth. Those are the ports that are eligible for through the Port Development Assistance Program. That's what our request would support. But, you know, we're certainly willing to work with you and the Port Association to further refine those numbers.
Chair Murphy.
But I still don't understand. Is this the GO bond for $5 million for ports? Does that substitute for the $27 million that they thought they were requesting and that our committee should consider for the ports? Or because this is a definite cash thing, we should run with the $5 million rather than the $27
million? Mr. Rudin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I think the $5 million is what's in the governor's recommendation. As I was alluding to, I think the Ports Association may have a larger request than that. And so it might be a case where we should just connect with them and make sure that, you know, that they're able to provide information about what their request is. But that, again, the $5 million is what was able to fit in the governor's recommendation for the program. And I'll just say that in 2020, we did receive $14 million for the Port Development Assistance Program.
I just needed that clarification that we're supposed to be considering now, if we followed the governor's recommendations, we would be considering about around that $5 million thing rather than the $27 million thing. And I'm sure that's a great disappointment to the ports. And I know that the port, Ms. DeLuca, at the Port of Duluth will have something a lot more to say. So thank you very much. And then is that same theory go with the Safe Routes to School that today you're offering $1.5 million in GO bonds for Safe Routes to School, even though there's $6 million of requests?
Mr. Rudin?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy, yeah, that's correct. I think in Safe Routes to School, you know, we also have the active transportation program now too that is somewhat similar in nature. And so I think, you know, in that case, it might be helpful to kind of view both requests together. So we have the $1.5 million for Safe Routes to School plus $5 million for the active transportation program. So I think in that case, the agency a little bit higher than what was in the final recommendation. But again, the two programs are meant to address similar type needs around the state.
Thank you.
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. You'd mentioned the Robert Street Bridge and reconstruction. So I had a question of, will that bridge be built transit ready for the bus rapid transit G line? And if it needs additional support for that, and then I can't let the moment go by without asking about the Lafayette Bridge safety reconstruction. We do have a bill being introduced today.
Okay. Commissioner.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, we will get back to you on Robert Street Bridge. I can't, you know, in my mind, I can't imagine it not being designed in such a way that it accommodates the G line, but we will double check that and follow up with you to make sure that's the case in terms of the planning. And then on the Lafayette Bridge, as you know, we've met a few times on this issue, and we do have work right now going and being able to look at what our options are as MnDOT on the St. Paul side of the Lafayette Bridge to eliminate the safety issues that have developed after the reconstruction. And we do see that as a potential, you know, one of the hard things here is that is, I think, a potential project for discretionary funding, both because it would meet both a safety, mobility, and possibly bridge category. And so that's why that flexible match funding is going to be so important as that project is developed. And of course, I need to say, and you know this, that we are trying to do some short-term measures to also increase the safety of particularly the motoring public on that section of the bridge to alert folks to when the traffic is backed up and try to give people a further warning to eliminate crashes.
Chair Hansen, last follow-up.
Thank you.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. I am going to follow up on Representative Murphy's question about Safe Routes to School. As you know, I represent Egan House District 51B, where a young student lost his life because there wasn't a safe route to school. And while this situation in our community has been addressed, how many places are there? And so I was deeply disappointed to see just $1.5 million, knowing that communities that had come forward with requests more than tripled that, and how much more would it be if they knew there was a fund available? So my question on that is, why is it so low? What is the plan to catch it up to the need? And is there funds in the supplemental budget? Do you anticipate adding more? Then we came on to the next slide on active transportation. And the $1 million for pedestrian projects in Indian Country similarly struck me as very meager. This is all of these are safety and equity issues. And so I'm troubled by the level of priority given to these, and I would ask you to comment. Thank you.
Commissioner.
So Mr. Chair and Representative Ryer, so in I just want to put it in context. In 21, we received $5 million for safe routes to school. In 2020, we received $3 million in the Capital Investment Committee. We will follow up with you to share how those dollars have been spent at this point and what is still available. Sometimes what's happening here is that those $8 million may not be 100% spent. And so we are proposing to be able to actually leverage a bunch of the federal money into the issues around the most vulnerable users in our system, people who walk and roll. And so there's actually several opportunities, both from formula funds as well as discretionary funds at the federal level, to be able to move forward. And we believe that we can really make a big impact on what the need is. So when you see the discretionary fund match, those are the types of things where we are going to work with communities to pull in those federal funds. So it's hard to say exactly, is that another, you know, $10 million into the state? We don't know yet, but there's a huge priority on both equity projects, as well as walking and rolling across the state. And so this 1.5 is in some ways a down payment to continue the work that's been done. On Indian Country, there's actually very specific funding that will come to Indian Country through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. We could follow up with members of the committee about that. That's money that does not come through MnDOT even, that will be available because this is a huge priority issue for both the federal government, for the Biden administration, as well as the Walz and Flanagan administration, to be working with the communities in Indian Country to have safety as a top priority. As I mentioned, it's, you know, we ask for GO funds. If the committee decides to grant more, I am most certain we have more projects that we can deliver on with tribal nations.
Representative Ryan, last follow-up.
Thank you. I will look forward to seeing a full picture. I'll appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Lilly.
You, Chair Lee, my question was exactly what Ms. Ryer and Representative Representative Murphy were asking on safe routes. It's yeah, it was a little bit of flinch. It's good to hear your expanded answer and but yeah, so I think that'll be good to hear more. Just finally, to thank you, Commissioner, for your service to Minnesota and as Commissioner, and good luck on your continued journey to Minneapolis. I don't know if I'd want to work for Minneapolis, but I'm just messing with that, Chair Lee, a little. But no, good luck. And thank you for your service to Minnesota.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lilly. I just want to say this is probably my last appearance before the Capital Investment Committee, a committee I served on at one time. Maybe I'll be able to come back in my new role at some point and talk with you all. But I want to just share with all of you the great work that goes on at MnDOT. My leaving has nothing to do with that great work. It has to do with the opportunity to go serve my adopted home city and make an impact. And I'm excited about that. So thank you for mentioning that.
Thank you so very much, Commissioner Anderson Kelleher, for coming by today. Just real quickly, for the other agencies that are on today, we may not get to you. And so our committee staff will be in contact about bringing you back on. Next up, we have Chair Zelli from the MAC Council. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Excuse me, I'm trying to unmute. Hello, everyone, Mr. Chair, members. I am Charlie Zelli, Chair of the Metropolitan Council, and it's my honor to appear before you to present the governor's request. I first say it's my honor to follow Commissioner Kelleher, who has been a great partner for Metropolitan Council and a great steward of a great agency at MnDOT. We are going to be covering three areas, and I'll just work through them quickly. The first, the Busway Capital Improvement Program, and then two others, inflow infiltration, and then the Regional Parks Grant Program. But first, the Busway Capital Improvement Program. I think you are very familiar in this committee with the arterial bus rapid transit kind of service. The next slide, we really have this system that augments regular bus in our most trafficked corridors. The A line and the C line have shown how successful this enhanced service is. It's faster, it's more reliable. And the next slide, you see these stations like have the kind of look and feel of a light rail station, ticketing machines. Its own lane for the buses to come through, low floors for easy access, and even little gizmos that give preference going through intersections. So we've found this to be very popular, and it is really building out our entire network. With this $60 million, we were able to leverage some of these federal funds. The IIJI, we've all talked about, will provide opportunity to really accelerate this network of ABRT lines. This $60 million could be help us plan and develop some of the early work to bring the F line, G line, and the H line. And I think on the next slide, you'll see where these lines fit into the larger puzzle. You can see both the transitways of LRT and dedicated busways are augmented by these lines in gray with letters. And the F line, the H line, the G line really comes across and connects a lot of the suburban, exurban, and this area around our central city. So it really shows that transit is so much more than just commuting. These are service that comes every 10 minutes, all day long. It's what people use, not just to access jobs, but schools, doctors, grocery stores, where people live their lives. Next program is the inflow and infiltration program. As you may be aware, we're very fortunate in the metro area to have separated systems. Our wastewater system is separated from the stormwater, which allows us to ensure that we have the capacity to treat all water going through our sanitary system. The challenge is the leaks and the where fresh water, clean water, kind of seeps into the system. So it's a great investment to reduce any of those kind of cracks. And as you'll see, our Metro Council Environmental Services kind of runs the interstate system of sewers where the cities will plug in and individual homes plug into the municipal systems. And this program really helps municipalities address these aging connecting systems. And this funding will provide up to 50% matching communities who have all really appreciated, I think, this program, given the state of some of these connecting pipes are aging. You can see there's as many as 80 cities and townships which are eligible and actually avail themselves of this very popular program. And then finally, the Regional Parks and Trails Grant Program, the governor's recommending $3 million for these kind of a pass-through program. Every dollar goes into capital investments. There's 10 implementing agencies, these are the 10 park systems, where we as Met Council can match the funds for the state investment of $3 million, we will take from Metro Council's tax levy an additional $2 million that helps improve, again, much like the DNR. These are aging systems, aging facilities, but also enhance accessibility an opportunity for the incredible increase in use that we've had of our park system. Often misunderstood, this shows the map of this amazing metro park system. We're very fortunate. It's one of the great assets of our metro area, and actually our state. And we feel that this is such a critical part of our natural resources right here in the metro area. And again, getting quite a bit of use. And these dollars, there's no shortage of projects to fund with these investments. So that's it in a nutshell. I can stand for questions. I'm joined by Judge Shutton and also Nick Thompson, who is the Deputy General Manager of Metro Transit in charge of capital projects.
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Commissioner. Thank you very much for coming this morning and Chair, sorry.
I answered anything.
So anyways, at the end there, you covered the parks and trails, and that was kind of my question. And it just concerns me. It just seems woefully kind of short. I mean, but I know you really captured it in your comments, and I know you know this, just the use, it's been loved to death, and but what a treasure, and we just need to continue to invest and make sure, you know, we're meeting some of the mobility challenges, you know, people that are facing that, and then obviously wear and tear. But I was disappointed. I don't know if you plan to ask for more in a supplemental in this area, but I sure hope that we can be a lot more bold and thoughtful and to meet the need. A lot of people choose this and need it, you know, for our quality of life and choosing to live in Minnesota. It's, you know, it's not the nice warm weather we have outside today, but anyways, I know you know this, but we need you to partner to ask for more and move that needle. And I love the match, so thank you for that. And it's we know it's love to death, so thank you.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, I couldn't agree with you more, and I will be a strong advocate for the role that this park systems provide for our metro area. We talk about transit and housing and park systems, and guess what? They're all interconnected, and we're providing greater access for these wonderful amenities. And yes, there is wear and tear, because I think we're having our park usage up as much as 50% during the pandemic. Really shows the role it plays. So yes, I think that the park agencies certainly would probably be visiting you with some of their needs, but know that we really stand ready to help you whatever facts and understandings you require.
Thank you.
Chair Firebird.
Thank you, Chair Lee. I thank you for the discussion of inflow and infiltration. That's an issue that's very important, I know, in my community as well. I know it's an area too where there's a huge amount of need, both in the private sewer lines as well as the public sewer lines. And I know there was a recommendation for, I think it was $5 million to address inflow and infiltration, but I know the need is actually considerably greater than that. You know, I've actually had like major sewer issue in my basement, and it's just something that no person should go through. So I guess I'm just wondering why there isn't, you know, given the need for it, both at the public and the private sewer lines, why there isn't a request for more of an investment in this area.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative, you know, you really highlighted the connections here that are so important to consider. We feel we can maintain the interceptor system in pretty good shape. You know, I'm the one who's talking about roads and bridges, but our major sewer systems are relatively good shape because they're really funded through fees and SAC charges. But the municipal connections and then the individual private connections are the ones that really need to be addressed. And we certainly have had some thoughts about how to help the private connections, and we're willing to kind of think about that in the future. That's not part of this recommendation, but something we're acutely aware of, and we think going forward there's opportunities to think about the system as a whole, because it's only and you pointed out so well, people have individual stories. Once you've experienced it, you get it that this is the system is only as good as every link.
Representative Rowley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for Chair Zeller. Specifically to the BRT, the ridership over the past 2 years, could you describe how that has lined up with the projections that you had, and then compare and contrast that to what your projections are for the next 2 years, please?
Chair Zeller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Rowley. It is interesting if we think, and I will give a very general picture of the ridership declines during the last 2 years during COVID, where we're roughly down, you know, well over 50% system-wide. But different modes, different bus areas were declined at different amounts. When you think about the commuter express runs, those are down the worst. That was really going from downtown to a suburb, mm-hmm. down as much as 90%. When you think about the these regular, mostly highly traveled corridors, where these ABR2 systems are going, those are down the least. And in fact, in some cases, in some of our older, more well-traveled bus routes, like Route 5, others, we actually added service because we wanted to maintain social distancing. And the ABRTs are the ones, the A line, the C line, which were in operation, they were down the least, if that makes sense. They were maybe, you know, so I think that, and before the pandemic, they were going above projection. So we actually see this kind of service, this every 10 minutes, where people can have greater access to a lot of different areas where they want to get around, is incredibly efficient. And we project conservatively that there will be a slow recovery, but we certainly think this kind of system will be is central for transit of the future, given the affordability of access by transit and also the fact that we're able to reach areas which were kind of transit deserts, marginalized in the past. Even though these are very popular lines, we think these lines give a greater opportunity to make better connections and connections with those backbones, those LRT systems, the transitways. They're part of this network, and the ABRTs kind of connects the dots.
Representative Raleigh, last follow-up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you're going exactly where I wanted to go, Chair Zeller. I'm concerned about the fare recovery rates throughout the entire system. I'm also very concerned about like the Newport Transit station. It was $6.45 million. At the time, there was about 8 riders per day. What's the projections on opening that back up with its 150 car lot? And then also, how do we avoid that type of a situation as we're looking to spend, I believe it's $60 million in this capital request? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before you go, Chair Azali, we only have 3 minutes. And so, Representative Rasmussen, why don't you give your question, and then Representative Hansen and Representative Hewitt, and then Chair for you.
I'll wrap it all up.
Go ahead, Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Azali, for coming here today. Investments in Metro Transit only make sense if people ride it, and I think people are only going to ride Metro Transit if they feel safe. And as we've discussed previously, Chair Zelli, I'm very concerned with increased crime on Metro Transit. It's been widely reported that violent crime is up, and this hurts people that rely on transit to get to the hospital, school, work. We had a survey that was released late last year that said 90% of Metro Transit police officers say there's no appropriate follow-up if they arrest or cite someone. Additionally, only 10% of Metro Transit's officers felt that they were supported by the Met Council. And so Chair Zelli was wondering if you could address how short you are on officers for Metro Transit and why the officers are feeling unsupported. And my follow-up question, Mr. Chair, would be, why do 90% of officers feel that there's no appropriate follow-up when they do actually take action?
Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Zelli. I think, we've expressed this before, but I want to get it on the record. The administration has a massive request for the Public Facilities Authority and rural wastewater. The per capita investment in some of those locations is a very high per person. We have 82 communities in the metro area looking for inflow infiltration. So at a minimum, we would have the opportunity with one-time money to get this done once and for all. We want to get it done. We don't want to have this going on the rest of our lives of a little bit of inflow and infiltration here. So matching, you know, for every dollar we put into Greater Minnesota, we put a dollar into inflow infiltration, I think is very important.
Representative Hewitt.
Chair Zelli, thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Zelli, I just want to, again, state a point here yesterday on local government. Your team stated that actually we're not seeing what people are reporting in downtown Minneapolis and in St. Paul. People are taking the trains, especially for the hockey events, especially for the sellout football crowds, the boat show, and all others. We're seeing some really good things happening, and ridership is back up during those events, which we really like to point out because that's part of the reason we built these are for the big events, right? And so I think there's a lot of misinformation out there about how unsafe people feel, but you know, there's some things that we have to deal with, but I really think we have to look to the positive, how people are feeling confident with where this is going. So thank you, Chair Zelli.
Chair Zelli, any closing remarks to respond to those? And then I think it would be great if you could follow up individually with the members and their questions too.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. Just briefly, these are really important questions. We are leaning into safety. We recognize the need for recovery. We think transit plays an incredibly important role. Even during the pandemic, we carry 70,000 to 80,000 to 90,000 people a day. So as we have seen now, as Omicron recedes, kind of an uptick both in our people, you know, who, our own workforce and riders. So as downtowns recover, some of that transit operations will recover as well. But we will follow up with questions and give you specific initiatives we're taking to address some of the issues that were discussed. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair Zelli, for coming by to present on the Met Council and then members. Next week, we'll shift gear and focus a little bit more on the federal infrastructure. We'll have folks coming in from the National Conference of State Legislature. And with that, members, the committee is adjourned.